make a few weeks back?" Yasmin asked. "The shrew feet were past their prime, and the whole batch ended up stinking really bad. I added lavender, lemongrass, all the usual, hoping to cancel it out, but nothing worked. So I threw in a few sprigs of bindweed." Yasmin snapped her fingers. "Ta-da! No more odor."
"You're wrong!"
Natasha exclaimed. Her uncertainty had passed. Now there was only anger.
"Bindweed doesn't do that!"
"Except it did," Yasmin replied. "So I really don't see what other explanation..." Alex clapped his hands together as though he had just thought of a great idea.
"Hey, I know," he suggested. "Maybe you got your ingredients confused. You thought it was bindweed, but it was... I don't know, what takes away smell?"
He shrugged and turned to Natasha for assistance. The witch, clearly warming to the idea that Yasmin had made a mistake, was quick to respond.
"Cinnaroot," she said. "It's the only thing that would have actually worked."
Alex nodded, as though this was only of passing interest, but there were fireworks exploding in his head.
"Got it, got it, got it."
"Oh,"
Yasmin exclaimed, smacking herself in the forehead.
"This is embarrassing. I had just used cinnaroot in a different oil, and I guess I might have gotten it confused with bindweed."
"They don't even look anything alike,"
Natasha said, her air of superiority returning in full force.
"How stupid can you be?"
"You're right," Yasmin said.
"Of course I'm right,"
Natasha replied, raising her chin high.
"I'm the witch!"
She snapped her fingers in Alex's direction.
"Well, what are you doing? Correct your story before you forget. And if you need to do any more research in the future, you come to me. Got it?"
"Got it," Alex said, removing a pencil from his pocket. He erased his first use of bindweed and then looked up with a shy smile. "Does cinnaroot start with an S or a C? I just want to make sure I get it right."
16. A Pair of Red Eyes. After a quick breakfast, the two children donned their goggles and entered the nursery. It was the first time that Alex had been back since the incident with the danglers, and he was amazed at all the work Yasmin had done. Shattered black lights had been replaced, overturned plants restored to their rightful position. Luminous leaves and glowing stems created a brightly lit path through the darkness. Unlike the last time he had been here, the nursery was quiet and peaceful. "Why does that night seem so long ago?" Alex wondered. They moved quickly, Yasmin stopping every so often to gather an ingredient she needed. At one point, she handed Alex a pair of scissors to hold. She didn't ask him to hold them, nor did she need to. Inspired by this subtle gesture of friendship, Alex decided to risk a question that had been on his mind. "So, where do you live?" Alex asked. "In the real world."
"Why do you want to know?"
Yasmin asked. The old caution had crept into her voice.
"Sorry," Alex said, a little hurt. "I know you don't like to talk about your old life. I just thought that maybe things had changed."
She touched his hand in the darkness.
"It's not that I don't want to tell you, Alex," Yasmin said. "It's just, it hurts too much to talk about it. I miss my family, a lot. But they're like a wound that hasn't healed. If I don't think about it, the pain is bearable. But the moment I talk about home or say their names, I remember how bad it hurts. It has nothing to do with you."
"I get that," Alex said, relieved. "I just wanted to see how close we live to each other." He paused, then added softly, "You know, in case we ever want to hang out or something. After."
"Oh," Yasmin said. "You really think we're going to get out of here?"
"Unicorn Girl did it," Alex said. "Why not us?"
Yasmin considered this for a long time.
33rd Street, she finally said, looking over her shoulder.
Her face was tinted mauve from a nearby fern.
Just off Parsons.
Alex smiled. It was too far for him to walk, but there was a bus stop right on the corner.
That'll work, he said.
They took a sharp left down a narrow hallway that he hadn't noticed before. After a short walk, they came to a heavy curtain identical to the one near the entrance to the nursery. Yasmin held it open for him. As he entered the next room, Alex felt Lenore brush past his legs. Until that moment, he'd had no idea that she had even followed them, but he was glad.
She should be here for this, he thought.
She's one of us.
You can take your goggles off now, Yasmin said, letting the curtain close behind them.
She removed her own goggles and reached for something behind Alex.
Click.
Work lights buzzed to life. They were regular lights, not black lights, and Alex squinted against the unexpected brightness. After his eyes had a chance to readjust, he saw that he was in a simple room with a concrete floor and four identical silver machines.
Oil distillers, Yasmin said. You put the magic herbs inside, steam sucks out all the good stuff and turns it into a few drops of essential oil. Pretty cool, right?
Each distiller was split into two vats with dials and tubes between them. The bottom one was fat and wide and looked like it could hold a lot of liquid. Above it was a tall cylinder on a metal stand that reminded Alex of a pipe from an old church organ. Three of the distillers bubbled and chugged and occasionally released puffs of copper-hued smoke into the air. Alex stepped closer to one of them and held his hand a few inches shy of its surface. Waves of heat tingled his skin.
"Don't touch it!" Yasmin exclaimed. "You'll get a nasty burn!"
Alex pulled his hand back.
"What's this one making right now?" he asked.
Yasmin consulted a notebook hanging off a small stepladder.
"Popularity oil,"
she pointed to the other two machines in turn.
"Hair-growing oil. Acne oil."
"To give someone acne or take it away?"
"Beats me," Yasmin said. "I just follow the recipe."
She crossed the room to a wooden workbench. Long trays held beakers of all shapes and sizes. There were also several knives crusted with old plant matter.
"How long will it take?"
Alex asked, bending down to feed Lenore a handful of Fruit Loops. She gobbled them up quickly and then nudged his pocket with her head, wanting more. Alex obliged.
"We can't do anything yet," Yasmin said, hanging the herbs from hooks above the workbench. "We have to let these dry overnight."
She switched on a small heating unit beneath the herbs. Warm air blew upward.
"In the morning, I can set them up in the distiller. Figure 6 hours in the machine. We should be ready to go by tomorrow night."
"Assuming I can think of a story," Alex said. "Only two left. After tonight, I'm all out."
"Why bother writing anything new?" Yasmin asked,
washing her hands in a slop sink.
"Natasha is going to drink the sleeping oil during dinner. She'll be asleep before you have to read anything."
"We don't know if it's going to work right away," Alex said. "The original recipe was for a potion. We're changing it to an oil. What if it takes a little while to kick in? We want everything to seem as normal as possible while we wait."
"A single drop of oil is super concentrated," Yasmin said, bending down to check a temperature gauge outside one of the distillers. "My guess is it will work even faster than a potion."
She thought about this for a moment.
"Huh," she said. "I hope it's not too strong. We don't want to kill her."
"Yeah," Alex said. "I want to get out of here, but I don't want to murder anyone."
"Oh, no," Yasmin said, shaking her head. "I would feel bad, too. Well, sort of, but that's not the reason we don't want to kill her. Think about it. What happens if you're wrong about her bedroom door? What if it doesn't lead outside?"
"It does," Alex said. "I'm positive."
"Then what if that particular bone key has some sort of magical protection," Yasmin said, "and Natasha is the only one who can use it?"
Oh,
Alex said. He hadn't thought of that possibility. I see what you mean now. If something happens to Natasha, we might be trapped in the apartment forever. Eventually, we'd just starve to death. He shuddered as his overactive imagination sent him horrifying images of starvation. Lenore, sensing a sudden need for comfort, brushed against his legs. That was always my argument with Eli whenever he said we should try to kill her, Yasmin said. Not that he listened in the end. I do have an idea, though. What if we put this off a few days and test the oil first? Make sure we know what it does. Didn't you just say it could kill Natasha? Alex asked. Not test it on us, Yasmin said. She eyed Lenore. But there might be another living creature that could help us out. I mean, the oil probably works fine, so it'll just end up being a nice nap. Lenore looked from Yasmin to Alex with an expression of disbelief. Is she seriously suggesting this? Alex picked up the cat and held her close. Not going to happen, he said. Fine, said Yasmin. Then we'll just have to go into this blind. But yeah, you should probably have a story ready, just in case. We don't really know what to expect. Weren't you working on a ghost one? That sounded pretty good. Still stuck, Alex said. Want to kick some ideas around? Alex hesitated, but only for a moment. Time was running out, and he needed all the help he could get. That would be great, he said. Let's see, Yasmin said. My language arts teacher said you're supposed to write what you know. So, ever have any scary experiences? Well, this one time I was captured by a witch. Besides that. Okay, Alex said, taking a deep breath. There is one thing. I've never really told anyone about it, though. Yasmin took a seat on the floor and motioned for Alex to do the same. All we need is a campfire, she said. Come on, tell me. So, I was waiting for the 7 train with my parents, not on one of the outdoor platforms, but down in the Main Street station. There was a pretty bad snowstorm that day, so there weren't a lot of people out and about. The platform was empty. My parents were having some kind of serious talk with John, so I wandered away, mostly out of boredom. I must have been, like, I don't know, 4 or 5 at the time. I crept down to the end of the platform just to see if the subway was coming, and deep in the tunnel, I saw these 2 red lights in the distance. At first, I figured it was just a pair of signals or something. Alex swallowed slowly. But then they blinked. Yasmin's eyes widened. What happened next? She asked, transfixed. The eyes moved, Alex said. They got closer to the edge of the tunnel, to the border between the darkness and the light. I knew I should go back to my parents, but those red eyes hypnotized me. Alex rose to his feet, acting out his movements in the story. I got closer to the darkness. Closer. It was like I wasn't even controlling my own feet anymore. He knelt down, his face close to Yasmin's now. And then, the thing with the red eyes, it whispered something. He said. Yasmin leaned forward. What? She asked. Yasmin! She screamed, falling backward. Got you, Alex said, laughing hard. I got you so good. You are the worst, she exclaimed, smacking him hard on the arm. For a second, Alex was afraid she was actually mad, but then he saw the huge smile on her face. Seriously, we are no longer friends. You have no choice, Alex said. I'm the only one here. Lenore, Yasmin said, turning toward the cat, would you like to be my friend? My only friend? Lenore gave both of them a strange look, as though she would never understand humans, and disappeared.
"You just got rejected by a cat," Alex said.
"It kind of hurts," Yasmin said. "You know, even though you're a total jerk and I'm going to hate you forever, you did give me an idea. That story was scary because it was so normal. Everyone knows what a subway station is like at night. I could picture it in my head. So maybe you should write about something in your life. It doesn't even need to be anything scary at first. You can just dress it up that way."
"Take something real and make it creepy," Alex said, nodding his head. "A lot of famous horror authors do that."
"Exactly," Yasmin said. "Like, imagine you were going to write a story about someone you know. Who would you write about?"
"My brother," Alex said without hesitation.
"Really?"
Yasmin asked in surprise.
"From what you said, I didn't think you guys were close."
"We're not," Alex said. "That's the point. Every story needs conflict. And every moment with John, conflict."
"Maybe start with him then."
"Brothers who don't get along," Alex said, rolling it over in his head, "and then add some of my other ideas. See what works best together."
"Like cooking," Yasmin replied, smiling. "Maybe we're not so different after all, except you're still a jerk and I'm really nice. That's why Lenore likes me better."
"Lenore does not like you better."
"Enough yapping," she said, shoving him playfully toward the exit. "You need to get to work."
By the end of the day, Alex had started 4 different stories about brothers who couldn't get along. None of them were right. He began to wonder if the whole thing was a dead end.
"What am I going to do?"
As if they didn't have enough problems, Natasha seemed to be on to them. She barely said a word all evening except to ask Alex for his notebook. She examined it with surprising thoroughness, even pausing to read a page here and there, and then handed it back to him with a knowing look, as though a suspicion had been confirmed. As Alex read his story about a girl who gets a strange pet for her birthday, he felt her eyes watching him the entire time.
"She knows."
But later, as he lay in bed, too worried to sleep, Alex changed his mind.
"If Natasha knew what we were up to, why didn't she do something about it right there and then? I'm just seeing shapes in the shadows, that's all."
That made him feel a little better, but it didn't help him with his other problem. The story.
"What if I can't think of anything?" he thought, heart racing. "Will Natasha have time to turn me into one of her porcelain figurines before the sleeping oil kicks in?"
He stared at the mattress above him, cycling through ideas like channels on a TV.
"Eyeglasses that let you see invisible monsters. A gravestone that tells you when you die. A comic book shop that..."
And then it hit him.
"There you are!" he exclaimed.
Alex burst into laughter. He couldn't help it. The perfect idea had been in front of him the entire time. There was no sense trying to go back to sleep. His mind was awake and eager to work. Alex practically skipped to the library and hopped into his chair. The words came easily, as he knew they would. By late afternoon, he had finished his story. 17. Problems and Solutions. Yasmin somehow found the time to make another incredible meal that night. Fried fish with sweet potato fries and homemade coleslaw. Alex pinched his fingers together, intending to steal just one tiny fry. Yasmin slapped his hand away.
"Fine," Alex whispered. "But the moment she falls asleep, I'm eating these. Where did you learn to cook like this anyway?"
"Maicito," Yasmin said.
"Oh," Alex said.
He remembered Yasmin's story, the cruel way that the apartment had captured her.
"I'm sorry, I didn't mean..."
"It's okay,"
Yasmin said.
Alex was surprised to see that she was smiling. I don't know why, but it doesn't hurt as much, thinking about her now. Sito and I used to spend hours in the kitchen together. She was the only one who supported my dream. Yasmin's cheeks grew red. I want to open my own restaurant when I grow up, she added shyly.
Cool, Alex said. What kind?
Yasmin's face lit up.
Vegetarian, she said. Mixed menu, American and Middle Eastern, and there's going to be a baseball theme. All the waiters and waitresses will wear uniforms, and this is my favorite part. Customers get a pennant that they can stick in the middle of their table, like a flag, whatever their favorite team is.
Even Yankees fans?
I suppose, Yasmin said, rolling her eyes.
That sounds amazing.
There was an awkward pause. Both of them knew that they were killing time, nervously putting off the next step in their plan. After that, there would be no turning back. They stared at Natasha's glass, filled to the brim with lemonade.
You should do the honors, Alex said.
Yasmin withdrew a tiny vial from her pocket.
It's still a little warm.
The lemonade's cold, Alex said, reaching for a spoon. We'll mix it up. She'll never know.
Okay,
Yasmin said, slowly tilting the vial over the rim of the glass.
Here goes nothing.
A drop of clear oil fell into the lemonade. Alex waited for it to sink into the liquid and disperse, but instead, the oil spread across the surface, leaving a greasy scrim that stretched from one edge of the glass to the other. Alex stirred the lemonade. All that did was spread the oil around and make it even more obvious.
Why isn't this working?
Alex asked. The spoon clinked against the glass, faster and faster, in tune to his growing frustration.
Is it because it's magic?
Yasmin clapped a palm to her forehead.
It's not a magic thing, she said. It's a chemistry thing. Oil doesn't mix with water. I'm such an idiot.
Alex stopped stirring. The oil settled to the surface. There was no way to miss it.
It's not your fault, he said. I didn't think of it either.
Maybe she won't notice, suggested Yasmin.
Alex shook his head and poured the ruined lemonade into the sink.
We're going to have to think of something else, he said. We can't give this to Natasha.
Can't give what to Natasha?
While they were talking, the witch had entered the kitchen behind them. Alex had no idea how long she had been there, what she had overheard. From the corner of his eye, he saw that Yasmin still had the vial of sleeping oil in her hand. She kept her back to Natasha, shielding the vial from view.
Well? Natasha asked, stepping forward. What can't you give me?
Your sweet potato fries, Yasmin said, smiling over her shoulder.
Not without paprika.
Yasmin was not a neat cook, and the kitchen counter was a mess. Carving board, garlic peels, breadcrumbs, knives, spatulas, eggshells, and half a dozen spice jars. In one smooth movement, she picked up the paprika and hid the vial behind a large container of oregano. It wasn't a great hiding spot by any means, but right now, it was the best they could do. Yasmin sprinkled the fries with paprika.
That's better, she said. All set now.
She carried Natasha's dinner into the dining room while Alex poured a fresh glass of lemonade. He thought about trying to add another drop of oil. Maybe it will be less noticeable if I don't stir it this time. But Natasha was still standing in the doorway, watching him.
Let's go, storyteller, she said. You and I have something important to discuss tonight, and I'm itching to begin.
There was a dangerous gleam in her eyes. Alex felt his body grow cold.
Coming, he said. Without giving the vial another look, he walked past Natasha and into the dining room. Yasmin was standing in the corner,
hands folded behind her back. She looked like she was doing her best not to cry. Alex knew how she felt. Their plan was ruined.
Sit,
Natasha said, indicating the chair next to hers. Alex hesitated, unsure if he had heard her correctly. He had never sat at the dining room table before.
I don't understand, he said.
Natasha flicked her fingers and the chair jerked backward, scraping against the floor. Invisible hands shoved Alex into the seat.
You don't have to understand, Natasha said. That's the joy of being a child.
You just have to do as you're told.
She sat at the head of the table and tossed a fry in her mouth.
Paprika, she said, nodding with approval. Nice touch.
Natasha seemed to be in a good mood. Alex didn't like that. At least when she was angry, he knew what to expect.
Have you been enjoying your stay here?
Natasha asked him, as though she was a concierge inquiring about his resort experience.
Not really, Alex said. I disagree, replied Natasha. I know you love sharing your stories. There's no use denying it. And lately I can't help but notice that you've developed a friendship with that one over there.
She nodded her head in Yasmin's direction.
You've tried to hide it from me. That was smart. But unlike the witch in that awful story you read me the other night, I'm not so easily fooled.
Natasha took a large gulp of her lemonade and wiped her mouth clean with the back of her hand.
It's all right, she said. It's better that the two of you have become friends. That will make tonight's lesson even more effective.
She leaned forward.
Which brings me to my next question. Is there something you'd like to tell me, storyteller?
Natasha studied his face.
What do I say?
Alex wondered, shifting in his seat. If she knew that they were planning to escape, things might go easier if he came clean now. But if she didn't know, and this was only a bluff... He glanced over the witch's shoulder at Yasmin, hoping for some guidance.
Don't look at her! Natasha snapped. She's not part of this conversation. This is between me and you, witch and storyteller. I'll ask you again. What have you been doing every day?
Writing, Alex said.
Liar! Natasha screamed. If that had been the case, you would have finished dozens of stories by now. But you haven't. You've been reading me your old stories instead.
Alex stared at her, slack-jawed.
Is that what she's so mad about?
He thought, with something approaching relief. Maybe this isn't about our escape plan after all.
How did you know?
He asked, happy to keep the conversation on this track.
All your old stories are in pen, Natasha said. Every single one. What little you've written since you've gotten here is in pencil. There aren't any pens in the library.
Alex winced, mad at himself for not using the pen in his bag to keep his writing consistent. It was as careless an error as not capitalizing the first letter of a sentence.
I'm sorry, he said. I meant to write more, but I haven't been able to concentrate. I miss my family, but I'm getting better. I've written 2 stories in the last few days.
Not good enough,
Natasha said. She rose from her seat and opened the door of the china cabinet.
If you keep at this pace, you're going to run out of stories in no time flat, and that won't do. A little inspiration is in order. Something to help you understand the consequences if you don't take your writing duties more seriously.
As Natasha talked, she carefully slid one figurine to the right, another to the left.
Are they still alive?
Alex wondered, his stomach churning. Can they feel her fingers wrapped around their bodies?
What you need, the witch said, is an example to set you on the straight and narrow.
Natasha stood back from the cabinet and grinned with malicious delight.
She had made just enough room for one more figurine.
That's where Yasmin will go, Alex realized with a rush of horror. Natasha's glad we've become friends, because she knows how much more it will hurt me when I lose her.
He could see from Yasmin's terrified expression that she had come to the same conclusion.
I hear what you're saying, Alex said, loud and clear. I'll write a story a day, 2 stories. You don't have to hurt her.
Natasha slammed her fist against the table. The glass of lemonade overturned, spilling its contents across the table.
I'm not finished, she exclaimed, with barely restrained rage. Maybe an example would do the trick, like I said. But there's a second possibility. Maybe it's you, Alex Mosher. You've caused nothing but trouble since you've gotten here. There are other storybooks constantly being written, ones that aren't in my library. You can be replaced. It's convenient growing my own stories, like owning a vegetable garden, but all you really do is save me a trip to the bookstore.
She gazed back and forth between the two children while making a clicking noise with her tongue.
The truth of the matter is I haven't decided which one of you to get rid of yet, Natasha said. I'll make my decision while you read your story.
She started to close the cabinet door and then stopped.
I guess I'll just leave this open for now.
Natasha sat back down and took a bite of her fish, chewing it with a displeased look. She nodded toward her overturned glass.
Get me more lemonade! This fish is dry!
Alex took the glass with trembling hands and entered the kitchen, his thoughts swirling.
She's going to turn one of us into a statue. What do I do?
He had to figure out a plan now while he was alone.
How can I stop her?
He looked down at the empty glass in his hands.
I have to risk it.
If Alex didn't do anything, he or Yasmin would be sitting on a shelf by bedtime. But if he put another drop of oil in the lemonade, there was the slightest chance that Natasha might take a sip without noticing it.
Maybe the oil works super fast, he thought. It might put her to sleep the moment it touches her lips.
It wasn't much, but a slight chance was better than no chance at all. He started to fill the glass with lemonade, and then stopped.
Maybe it will mix together better if I put the oil in the glass first, he thought. It's worth a shot, at least.
Alex reached for the vial behind the oregano container.
It wasn't there. No, he thought. That's impossible.
He frantically searched the entire counter, knocking over a jar of basil and spilling dried mint from a loosely capped bottle onto the floor. The sleeping oil was gone. After dinner, Alex lumbered into the living room, too stunned to speak.
Natasha took the oil, he thought, taking his seat. It's the only explanation.
She hadn't left the dining room at any point, but so what? Making a single vial disappear would be child's play for a witch. He watched Natasha ease into her chair and start up the oil diffuser. Her true age remained a mystery, but surely after being alive for so long, she needed to find new ways to relieve her boredom.
She's probably known about our plan from the beginning, Alex thought, taking his seat. Toying with us is her idea of fun.
He turned to Yasmin, wondering if she had any brilliant ideas, but she looked despondent. She had seen the vial was missing while clearing the table. They hadn't been able to talk about it, but Alex figured that she had come to the same conclusion as him. Natasha took a huge breath of blue mist and gazed at Alex expectantly.
Make this fast, storyteller, she said. We have a busy night in front of us.
He opened his notebook. We were so close to escaping, he thought.
Alex had written on more than one occasion about monsters who tore their victims' still-beating hearts from their chests.
Now he knew what it felt like. With a trembling voice, he started to read. The top bunk. When Keith learned that they were getting a new bunk bed, there was no doubt in his mind that he would be the one sleeping on top. After all, Keith was in the fifth grade, and his brother Scott was in kindergarten. A normal little brother would have seen the logic in that. Scott was not normal.
"Why should you get the top bunk and not me?" he asked. "It's not fair."
Keith didn't bother to explain. He knew that it would make no difference. To Scott, things that happened the way he wanted them to, such as getting every single present on his Christmas list, were fair. Disappointing events, such as losing a round of Super Smash Brothers, were not fair.
"You can have the top bunk in a few years," Keith said. "After that, I'll move to my own room and..."
"Not fair!" Scott exclaimed. "I want the top bunk now!"
Keith smiled patiently, though inside he wanted to scream at the little brat, something that he wished his parents would do more often. If he lost his temper now, however, Scott would only burst into tears and run to Mom.
"Is that his plan?" Keith wondered. "Is he trying to get me in trouble?"
No one else would believe that a 5-year-old could be so manipulative. Then again, no one else understood Scott as well as Keith did.
"Please," Scott begged.
His upper lip quivered in that maddening way that adults found irresistible.
"Could I please, please, please have the upper bunk?"
Keith looked into his brother's big blue eyes, shiny with tears.
"No," Keith said. "It's mine."
Scott's eyes hardened. The tears stopped. He gave him the wicked smile that he reserved only for his brother. Keith thought of it as his real Scott smile.
"We'll see about that," he said.
In the days leading up to the bed's delivery, Scott was a perfect little angel. He ate all his vegetables. He begged for stories and kisses instead of video games. He left tiny heart-shaped cards on his parents' pillows each night. And then, the night before the bed arrived, he struck the final blow.
"I'm so small," Scott said at dinner while finishing the last of his Brussels sprouts. "At school, some of the other kids make fun of me."
"What kids?" Mom asked.
"I'll email the teacher and..." "I don't want to get anyone in trouble," Scott said. "I just wish I was big, that's all."
His upper lip began to do its thing, quivering in that whimpering half-cry.
"What is it, sweetie?" Mom asked, already lost. "I know I can't be big," Scott said between tears. "But maybe I could feel big. Like, if I slept in the upper bunk like a big boy would do, I think that would make me feel just a little bit better."
Their parents exchanged a look of consideration. It was just long enough for Scott to glance in Keith's direction. He smiled his real Scott smile. The next morning, Keith steeled himself for bad news. He was used to Scott getting his own way, and he never argued when it happened. That was just the way things worked. It was the bed's assembly directions that saved the day. They stated in glorious red ink that kids 6 and under should sleep on the bottom bunk. Scott whined and pleaded and argued, but while their parents routinely gave in to his demands when it came to play dates and screen time, they refused to budge on matters of safety. That night, Keith triumphantly claimed the top bunk, while Scott was forced to sleep a lame foot and a half off the ground.
"It's not fair,"
Scott mumbled after the lights had been turned off.
"It's totally fair, and you know it," Keith said. "Can I sleep in the top bunk?" Scott asked. "Please!"
"No," Keith said. And then, unable to resist, he added, "The top bunk is for big kids only."
"Not fair," Scott said.
"Whatever," Keith said. "Go to sleep."
Keith figured that would be the end of it. He was wrong.
"Can I sleep in the top bunk?"
Scott asked the moment Keith's head touched his pillow the following night.
"It's not fair. Let me sleep in the top bunk."
Keith said no, but that didn't seem to matter to Scott. He asked again and again, long into the night. Keith hardly got any sleep at all. He told his parents the next morning. "Have a little patience," their father said, the tone of his words implying that Keith was at fault. "In a couple of weeks, the poor little guy will forget all about it." Except Scott, of course, wouldn't let it go. The talking was bad enough. But then, about a week later, Scott found an old broom handle and began poking the bottom of Keith's thin mattress. It didn't hurt. Scott didn't have the strength to press that hard, but it made sleeping impossible.
"Can I sleep in the top bunk?" Scott asked. "Just for one night, please?"
Keith was tempted to say yes just to get a good night's rest, but he knew it would be a mistake. Once Scott slept in the top bunk, it would prove to their parents that it was perfectly safe. After that, Keith wouldn't have a chance. Scott would win. The strange thing was, Keith didn't even particularly like sleeping on the top bunk. It was hotter up there, and the ceiling felt like it was pressing down on him. If Scott had been a different sort of kid, Keith probably would have let him have it. But Scott was what he was, and Keith refused to give him his way. Then Scott died. It was a stupid way to die, running after a ball like that. It wasn't even his favorite ball, just a moldy old thing that Scott had found under their stoop. He had been tossing it aimlessly against their garage door while Keith, on Scott duty, as his parents put it, sat on their front steps. When the ball skipped into the street, Keith instantly saw the speeding car, Scott's headlong dash toward the road, their inevitable impact.
"Scott!"
he screamed, rising from the steps.
"Stop!"
A normal kid would have stopped. Scott was not a normal kid. The night after the funeral, Keith thought about his brother while lying in bed. The little guy hadn't been all bad. Keith remembered a picture that Scott had drawn in preschool, stick figures of two brothers, one big and one small, standing beneath the shining sun. He fell asleep with tears in his eyes. Keith was awoken by the opening of the bedroom door. It was the squeakiest in the house. His dad always meant to oil the hinges, but never got around to it.
"Dad?" Keith mumbled, still groggy. "Mom?"
They hadn't spoken to him much since the accident. They had said all the right things, of course. "It's not your fault. There's nothing you could have done. We love you." But what he really wanted was for them to take him in their arms like he was a little boy again. Only then would he truly believe that they didn't blame him for Scott's death. The door creaked open even wider. From Keith's elevated vantage point, he would have been able to see his dad's or mom's head as they entered the room. He saw no one, leaving only two possibilities. Either the door had opened on its own, or whoever had opened it was a lot smaller than an adult. Footsteps scampered across the carpet. Blankets rustled as someone settled into the bottom bunk. Keith remained perfectly still. An invisible weight seemed to be pressing down on him. He wanted to shout for his mom or dad, but it suddenly required all his energy just to keep breathing.
"Keith,"
a quiet voice whispered beneath him.
"Can I have the top bunk?"
Keith tried to scream, but all that came out was a soft whimper. He was too terrified to leave his bed. If he did, he would have to go past the bottom bunk. He would have to see.
"Scott,"
Keith whispered.
"Is that you? Give me the top bunk."
It was his brother's voice, all right, only hoarser, as though Scott had been screaming. This isn't happening, Keith thought. Scott's dead. This is a nightmare. It's only a...
Something jabbed him in the back. Keith figured it was the broom handle, only Scott had never been able to push it this hard before.
It's not fair,
Scott whispered, his voice closer now. He was standing on the lower mattress.
I want the top bunk.
I'm sorry, Keith said.
A foul stench had suddenly filled the room.
I'm so sorry about what happened.
Something jabbed him again, harder this time. The mattress lifted into the air for a moment before crashing back down onto its frame.
Can I sleep on the top bunk?
Scott asked.
Please?
The force of this last word seemed to puncture something within Scott's body. Air hissed like a leaking balloon.
Please?
Scott repeated. Keith could hear the desperation and fear in his brother's voice.
He's all alone, Keith thought. He might not even understand what's happening to him. If I let you sleep in the top bunk, Keith asked quietly, will you go?
There was a long pause. The lower bunk squeaked as Scott shifted his weight from foot to foot. Keith heard dirt and pebbles patter to the mattress.
You'll never see me again,
Scott said.
Pinky promise.
All right, Keith said. You can have the top bunk. Tonight only.
He hesitated, not wanting to leave the false armor of his blankets, but he knew that there was no other way. I'll come down the ladder and go. I'm not going to turn around. I'm not going to look.
Scott didn't say a word.
Before Keith could lose his nerve, he threw off the covers and settled his left foot on the ladder, staring straight ahead at the bedroom wall as he descended the rungs. Second step. Third step.
A hand grabbed his ankle. It was cold and small, but strong enough to jerk him off his feet. Keith crashed to the floor. He turned over. A familiar figure crouched over him in the darkness, perched on the edge of the bottom bunk like a gargoyle. It craned its head forward into a beam of moonlight shining through the window, and Keith saw a face crusted with dirt and mud that didn't even look like his brother anymore.
It's not fair,
he said in his raspy voice.
How come you get to live and I don't?
Keith had no time to scream. His brother pounced from the bottom bunk and landed on top of him. Mrs. Block woke up early the next morning, anxious to set things right. They'd been so devastated by Scott's death that they'd completely ignored their oldest son. Knowing Keith, he probably blames himself, Mrs. Block thought, her heart aching for their quiet, sensitive child. He's mourning, too. I need to be there for him. When she entered the bedroom, Keith was still asleep in the top bunk. There was a peculiar smell in the room, like food that had gone bad. She would clean that up later. Right now, Mrs. Block just wanted to see her son. She stood on the bottom step of the ladder and stared down at him, sleeping peacefully. He had his arm wrapped around one of Scott's stuffed dogs. He must miss him so much, Mrs. Block thought, stroking his curly blonde hair. Keith's eyes opened. Mrs. Block gasped in shock. Keith had his father's eyes, a deep, solemn brown, but now they looked bright blue, like Scott's, she thought. Then Keith blinked, and she saw that his eyes were the same brown that they had always been. Mrs. Block decided that the exhaustion was making her see things that weren't really there.
I was so scared, Mommy,
Keith whispered, wrapping his arms around her. His voice seemed higher pitched than before. Mrs. Block held him tight. It had been a long time since Keith had hugged her, and this uncharacteristic show of affection filled her with joy. "I'm sorry," Mrs. Block said, tears coming freely now. "We should have been there for you, but everything is going to be okay now." They held each other for a long time. When they parted, Keith looked up at her with wide eyes. His upper lip quivered.
"I like the top bunk," he said.
Alex closed the notebook and looked over at Natasha. Despite everything, he was still curious if she had liked the story or not. Her eyes were closed. "Natasha?" Alex asked. No response. He put his ear next to the invisible wall and heard a gentle, rhythmic snoring.
"What are you doing?"
Yasmin asked, watching him with a befuddled expression. From her vantage point, she couldn't see Natasha's face.
"She's asleep," Alex said.
"No way," replied
Yasmin, springing from the love seat. She cupped her hands to her eyes and peered through the blue mist.
"Natasha never fell asleep during one of your stories before. This can't be a coincidence."
"It has to be connected to the sleeping oil,"
Alex agreed, hope rising.
"But how?"
"Natasha!"
Yasmin exclaimed, banging on the walls of the misting room.
"What are you doing?"
Alex asked, grabbing her arm.
"We need to see if this is a magic sleep or a regular sleep before we do anything stupid," replied Yasmin.
She screamed at the top of her lungs,
"Wake up!"
Natasha didn't stir. No question about it. This wasn't a normal type of sleep.
"The sleeping oil worked," Yasmin said in astonishment. "But how? We never gave it to her."
"Maybe there was still a little of it left on her lemonade glass," Alex suggested. "You said it was super concentrated."
"She's totally out, though," Yasmin said, examining Natasha from all angles. "Like Sleeping Beauty out."
"Could she be faking it?
What for? So she can jump out and yell, 'Gotcha?'"
"She might like that," Alex said. "Get our hopes up and then destroy them completely."
"Yeah, I guess you're right."
The oil diffuser cycle was coming to an end now, blue mist puffing out in fits and starts. Finally, it stopped altogether. Alex reached out, feeling for the nearest wall. It was gone.
"What now?"
he whispered.
"Grab her keys, just like we planned, but fast. Who knows how long she'll be asleep?"
Natasha was wearing a dark silk shirt and black pants. There was an odd-shaped lump in her left pocket, partially wedged between the chair and Natasha's thigh.
"The bone keys," Alex thought.
Unfortunately, they weren't within easy reach. It would require some digging to pull them out.
"Me or you?"
Alex asked.
"Me,"
Yasmin said. She didn't explain why, and she didn't need to. Yasmin was nimble. Alex was not. It made sense.
"Be careful,"
Alex said. Yasmin took a deep breath and stretched her fingers like a pianist before a recital. She crept forward and knelt on the floor, and then, after a moment's hesitation, slid her index finger and thumb into Natasha's pocket. As Yasmin dug deeper, Alex watched the witch's face carefully for any sign that she was about to wake up. For now, at least, her snoring continued unabated.
"I feel them,"
Yasmin whispered.
"Barely. With my fingertips."
She tried to get a good grip, changing positions several times.
"Rah! I can't get a hold of them. The keys are squished against this stupid chair." "Why don't I move her a little bit?"
Alex asked.
"You sure that's a good idea?"
"Nope."
Alex stepped forward and placed his hands just behind Natasha's shoulders, locking his elbows to maintain as much distance from the witch as possible. Still, it was a lot closer than he had ever wanted to get. Her hair smelled of smoke and a sweet, fruity shampoo, like something a child might use. Looking away, Alex planted his feet and twisted his hips, aiming to turn Natasha's body just enough for Yasmin to grab the keys. He forgot to support the witch's head, however, and it fell to the side, striking the wooden frame of the chair with a loud thunk. She stopped snoring. Alex froze in horror. He wanted to let go of Natasha. Get away! Get away! But he was afraid that the slightest movement might wake her. He remained still, watching her face, waiting for her eyes to open. A lifetime later, wet, ragged snores filled the living room. Alex thought it was the most beautiful sound that he had ever heard. Yasmin went back to work, and in one unexpected rush of movement, the keys slid free.
"Score!"
she said, raising them in triumph. Alex carefully released Natasha's shoulders and wiped his sweaty palms on his pants. He knew he should be excited, but the mystery of how Natasha fell asleep was still nagging at him. It didn't make any sense. Unless... Alex got down on his belly and reached beneath the footstool, finding nothing but empty space. He crawled forward, tapping the wooden floor around the chair.
"Have you gone crazy?" Yasmin asked. "Let's go! We have the bone keys!" "One more second."
He checked behind the chair, and that's where he found her, a warm, invisible body covered with soft fur.
"It's Lenore," Alex said.
Yasmin crawled over to join him, carefully lowering her hand until she felt the cat as well.
"What's she doing here?" Yasmin asked.
"Lenore must have been in the kitchen with us," Alex said. "She heard we were in trouble, so she took the vial of sleeping oil. Then she hid here behind the chair. When Natasha turned the diffuser on, Lenore was behind the magic walls.
And then she poured the sleeping oil in the machine while you were reading your story," Yasmin said, nodding. "Natasha was distracted. She wouldn't have noticed an invisible cat."
Alex felt Lenore's chest rising and falling in a steady rhythm.
"But of course Lenore inhaled the sleeping oil too," she said. "She was as trapped as Natasha." "That was so brave," Yasmin said. "Our little hero."
She looked up at Alex.
"We can't leave her here."
"Of course not." He slipped his hands beneath the cat and slowly got to his feet. It was harder than he wanted to admit. Lenore was heavy to begin with, and Alex's subpar diet since becoming Natasha's prisoner had sapped his strength.
"You okay?"
Yasmin asked.
"I'm fine," he said, keeping his eyes on Natasha. "But we have no idea how long this spell is going to last. Let's get out of here while we still can." "I just have to grab our stuff first."
"We have stuff?" Ignoring his question, Yasmin opened the closet door and dug out Alex's backpack. She had patched the hole in the bottom with duct tape.
"Food, water, coats," she said, slinging the backpack over her shoulder. "You said you saw trees, Alex. That doesn't sound like flushing. The last thing we want to do is make it this far and then die in a giant forest."
"Good point," he said. They ran down the hallway to Natasha's bedroom door. Yasmin picked through the bone keys on the ring. The one she settled on was yellow and brittle. It looked older than the others.
"It's not going to work," Alex thought as she slid the key into the crescent-shaped hole. "There's going to be another spell at play, like the one that turns the front door into a wall, and we'll find out that only Natasha can..."
The key turned. Yasmin released the breath she had been holding and opened the door. 18. The Other Side. Alex stepped over the threshold and into a forest that stretched out in every direction. Tall pine trees seemed to touch the night sky.
He instantly felt woozy. The amount of open space was overwhelming, like a burst of oxygen after holding your breath for a long time. "We're outside," he said in